Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Chris Evans here. A big thank you for downloading our Virgin Radio podcast. Coming up on this week's edition of The Best of the Breakfast Show with Sky, Rob Brydon chats his upcoming tour, Songs and Stories. Tony Riddle, the barefoot runner, tells us about undertaking the grueling National Three Barefoot Peaks. And former Speaker of the House of Commons, John Bercow, discusses his new autobiography, Unspeakable. Plus, Marie Forleo, Dr. Rahul Jandial, Francis O'Connor, and so much more, all to come. Enjoy.
His brand new tour, Songs and Stories, starts later this month, and he's soon to be seen tripping around Greece with Steve Coogan in the final series of The Trip on Sky One. Please welcome a man that leaves a good impression no matter where he goes. It's the one and only Rob Brydon.
Good morning, Roberto.
Good morning, Chris. Sorry I'm late.
Don't worry about that, my friend. It's a jungle out there. Hang on a minute. The final series of The Trip.
Yeah, well, yes.
What?
It's become the final series. We've done four, Chris.
Come on, everybody loves The
There's
Trip.
There's only so many times you can talk like
no,
that.
No.
There's only so many times you can say that is not how he talks.
Right, well, this is on Sky. Now, we've got this big Sky season launch. It's called Up Next. It's tomorrow. It's the showcase of all, and there's some amazing content coming up in the next 6 to 12 months. And loads of people are actually turning up. So you're turning up, Steve's going to turn up.
Yeah.
Now, I'll be hosting it a lot on stage. So when I come to you guys, we haven't got long, right? Everybody's like, David Schwimmer's going to be there and Ranganathan's there. And, like, so many names and faces are there. And what's happened is, Rob, just so you know, is that more people said yes than they expected. So now it's caused a bit of an issue. So, and everybody's going to love listening to you and Steve. But say we got 3 or 4 minutes. What do you want to do?
Oh, boy. I think you should just get Steve to do his Neil Kinnock impression. I'm happy when he's doing his Neil Kinnock impression. It's not contemporary, but then none of our impressions are. You know, it is like welcome to 1976.
Why does his Neil Kinnock impression particularly... Why does that
well, get, it's get a Welsh going? Voice, so I can do a checklist on it and I can say, yeah, that is very good, you know, and he gets the up and the down. And I mean, I can't do it, you know, it slightly annoys him because he doesn't really like doing impressions. you see with the Oscars and all this stuff, he feels a little bit above it.
Right.
So whenever you can ask him to do impressions, you see, he slightly bristles.
But isn't it funny because every acting role is an impression of the person, the character that you're inhabiting.
Chris, you took the words out of my mouth. This is what I tell him. He goes, no, it's not true. It's not true. It's a higher art.
Right, so anyway, we'll talk a bit more about that in a while. But Rob's on to talk about Songs and Stories, the tour. Starts the 26th of Feb till the 30th of April. You can get tickets at robbrydon.live. And it says here, / the trip to Greece Sky One. That's something different, isn't it? That you don't get that on... You can't go on the trip via the website.
Yeah, you can book. Come with us.
So
yeah.
Maybe there could be a fifth series. Who knows? So if the songs...
Yes.
And the stories from your tour had a fight...
Yes.
Which would win?
Ooh, question. Oh, good Lord. Well, I hope the song... Well, maybe the songs, because the band, I had the first rehearsal yesterday with the band, they are astonishing. It's an 8-piece band. There's cello, there's woodwind, there's brass. It sounds fantastic. But there will be jokes. I will be telling stories. I will be doing impressions. There will be a visit from Uncle Bryn, from Gavin and Stacey. So, you know, there'll be something for everyone.
And how is the post-Christmas Gavin and Stacey afterglow for you? 18 million viewers and people are still watching.
It's astonishing. The weird thing about Gavin and Stacey is that since it finished 9-10 years ago, it's only got bigger. You know, in that time, it's just got bigger. Man, there's so much love for it. So when the Christmas special was coming up, I knew it was good. Obviously, I was there when we filmed it. And then I watched it and I thought, this is great. But I wasn't sure it was going to get the biggest audience. I thought, well, it could be Mrs. Brown, could be Michael McIntyre, any of these big audiences. And then it just went,
boom.
Whoosh.
I know.
And people loved it.
So what can you tell us about what may have happened as a result of that?
In what sense, Christopher?
What do you think? What do you think I'm suggesting?
I don't know. What do you mean? Did Smithy say yes? Is that what you mean?
No, no, no. I mean, like, what? Are we going to get any more?
Are we going to get any more? Oh, well, I got into trouble. I went to the NTAs and they said to me on the line, you must want to do more. And I don't want to be diffident, but I said, well, not really. I mean, I'm quite happy to leave it there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I love when people want more. You know, I love it if you've done something and people are saying, oh, I want more. I think that's where you want to be. And then I saw things, oh, he puts the dampeners on. He doesn't want to do it. I would do it if they wanted to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But equally, I don't know how we'd ever top that. You know, that because it came back, it was such a surprise to people that they were going to do it. Nobody more so than me. I had no idea. And James phoned up one day, totally out of the blue, and said, oh, yeah, we've written it. And, you know, do you want to do it? I said, wow. So it would be nice if we did more, but I don't see it happening anytime soon.
But so what you were doing there, you were responding honestly.
Yes, yeah, I learned my lesson.
Shock horror. Yeah.
That's exactly, Chris, that is exactly right. And of course, then that gets taken because of course, I understand the media want a bit of conflict and drama. But I was just being honest and saying, well, no, I'd be quite happy to leave it. You know, we've done it. I love going out on a high. It's like a comedian's instinct, isn't it?
Yeah.
To get off the stage at the right time, you know, not hang about.
And also for the gang doing it, you know, it is good fun, but you've all got other stuff going on and it's just part of the whole rainbow of joy that you're lucky enough to get to do what you do.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It was fun. It was the happiest job I've ever
and
done.
Sometimes
seeing all
it's best
people.
To leave it at fun as well.
That's what I think,
leave
yeah.
It at fun. So when people come to see you, your last tour was how many dates? Your last 40 odd, isn't it?
I honestly don't know.
It was loads,
oh, no, the last two, a ton, over 100 probably, yeah.
Right. Will it be the same gang?
Same gang
to come
gang
see
of people.
You.
Yeah, it'll be some and then maybe some new ones. You, okay. Hopefully the same people come. You know, you look after them and they want to come back
and they
want to see you again. And you build up a sort of a family, you know? Kind of in anything I've ever done is you want to build a relationship so people think, yeah, I remember how I felt when, it's all about feeling. I remember how I felt when I went to see this person.
Yeah.
I want to feel like that again.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to go back and see them.
And we heard that great fun fact from the weekend yesterday, which is that when you laugh,
yeah,
that's the only time your fight or flight system isn't operating.
Oh, yeah, that's
and that's why people go. And so when you laugh, you feel truly liberated from everything, including yourself.
Well, I think
music may do it.
I think music, but particularly comedians. I think people, when you find a comedian you love, it's giving you such a good feeling inside.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. You want that feeling. So you go, oh, great, I'm going to go there. I'm going to feel great for an hour and a half, however long it is.
Rob Brydon, Songs and Stories, 26th of Feb, 30th of April. We'll be there. I hope to see you there as well. RobBrydon.live for details and tickets.
And tickets. Oh, yes. No good, just the details.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He served as Speaker under four Prime Ministers and is one of the only political figures to be instantly recognised by two words. His book, Unspeakable, is out now. So right, honourable ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the author of the book must be heard. It's John Bercow.
Okay,
good morning, John.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having me on your show.
You are very welcome. You are literally all over the place. You've been interviewed in almost every sort of weekend magazine. Your book has been reviewed to within an inch of its life. How have you found the last few days since the book has been out?
Huge fun. It's a great opportunity to get out, to try to sell one's messages and to engage with people. And inevitably, of course, it's a mixed bag. It's unpredictable. Different people have different opinions. That's the joy and vibrancy of democracy. Some people will like my book. Some people won't. I'm completely relaxed about that. I would just like to trumpet it as strongly as I can. And I suppose just to underline the point that it's merely my candid account, Chris, of my topsy-turvy existence.
The thing about Brexit was, you know, they say, one of my favourite quotes of all time is people do not buy how they think. they buy usually with their emotional brain and they think with their intellectual brain. And, you know, and Brexit was a very emotional sort of buy, wasn't it, in a way?
Maybe that's a good point.
That's what won it for.
Yeah, I don't think the judgment was made by the electorate on the basis of a study of the intricacies of the customs union or the single market. I think people had an instinctive sense. And the further away you got from London, the more people resented the political establishment. And I absolutely admit that I, for one, underestimated that. I thought, on balance, that David Cameron probably would win and Remain would win, not by a huge margin. But a lot of people felt that they were ignored, downtrodden, not heard, disrespected. And that all played into the way in which they voted in the referendum.
I said this to somebody, they didn't like it and they wanted to move on, having the same conversation on the show. I said, you know, the thing about the two campaigns is Remain is a stationary word. It is a verb in a way, but it doesn't suggest movement. And Leave suggests movement. And as human beings, we are programmed to progress.
Chris, have you ever thought of giving up your very lucrative career as a broadcaster and operating as a political consultant? Because I think you'd probably be able to offer some pretty wise advice about how people should play to the emotions and deploy emotional intelligence rather than intellectual intelligence.
But I think if you play to if I did that, for example, I know it's a joke, but if say I did that, and we have experience of it because we have distance, and distance can be very useful. We're not as clever as people that are involved in the hubbub of things, but perspective can sometimes outdo intellect. And also because we're relaxed, we don't get caught up in the knot of sense, as it were. So we can see things, it's all fine. But you couldn't, I don't think you could employ that as a play because that would be morally wrong. But what you could do is point out to the side that may be being played that they are being played, and then let them do what they have to do. That's what I think is quite interesting. But if you take an emotional situation, an emotional vote, an emotional election, an emotional result into the House of Commons, the emotion continues, and that's what we saw, wasn't it? It was all this. It was 4 years of emotion. It was like, oh my God, somebody put this fire out.
Well, I think there was a real parallel between Parliament and the country. People often make the point that Parliament didn't resolve Brexit until the 59th minute after the 11th hour, you know, by resolving to have a general election. But I think my point is that Parliament was divided as the country was divided. And just as the country kept debating Brexit and in the end was suffering from Brexit fatigue, Chris, the House of Commons, in a sense, was suffering from Brexit fatigue as well. The arguments were played out over and over and over again. And people felt they had to make their point over and over and over again because the other side was doing so.
Yeah.
Not just the other side of the House, but the other side of the argument. So in the end, although colleagues frequently perform brilliantly, and I've got huge respect for my parliamentary colleagues, I think some of the irascibility that you found in the country was played out in the chamber. People were getting fed up with each other.
Yeah.
And part of it was fatigue and tiredness and exhaustion, really.
Now it's all over, you know, a new beginning. Your identity was Speaker of the House of Commons. Obviously, you're a person within your own right, and you're a husband, you're a dad, and all those other things that go on. But what are you now? What do you see now for the next 5, 10 years? Or is there a plan? What do you want to do?
Well, I'm going to try and to earn a living, have some fun and do some good. I'm doing a lot of public speaking. My late father used to say, John, generally speaking, is generally speaking. And I'm doing a lot of public speaking, principally to commercial audiences and so on. I've got an academic post at Royal Holloway College, London University. I love universities and I enjoy going to them, talking to students, hearing from them, engaging with them. I'm Chancellor of my old university, University of Essex, a fantastic institution to which I feel everlasting gratitude.
They're all labels, though. What do you want to be inside? Where's the ambition?
Where's the ambition? I don't have an ambition for any elected office.
Right.
I feel that the pinnacle of my career was to serve as Speaker, which was a huge privilege. I'm completely relaxed about the fact that some people will think I did a good job and other people won't. I did it honestly. I tried to be a reformer. I tried to keep the best and improve the rest. If you ask me, what do I want to do now?
By the way, that can include putting your feet up by a lovely sandy beach somewhere. You don't have to do things that...
Well, I can do a little bit of that, but, you know, I'm 57 and I've got a wife that I want to support who does a fantastic job in the home, but I want to support her and our three children by working, and realistically I need to continue working for some time to come. So I don't really have a great career plan as such, but I'm enjoying the things I'm doing.
It sounds to me like you're thinking out loud. You know you want to do, you want to find a higher purpose, you know, become a force for good, and you're just having a little... think about those things.
Well, I don't think it's a great idea to jump into things. You know, I think when you leave a role, there's a lot to be said for taking a period in which you reflect and you talk to people and you hear from people. And You don't rush into commitments going at them, if you like, half cock and then regretting it. So quite a lot of people whom I very much respect, commercial people and others, said to me, John, take at least six months.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and think about it.
Here is little Freya, Dapper Dave's daughter, who's yet to reach her second birthday. Is that correct? Asking for water. Who might she sound like?
Water.
That's her water.
Well, very good.
But that's her order.
Water.
Did you say it's Freya?
Yeah, Freya, yeah.
Can I ask Freya if one day she'd like to be Speaker of the House of Commons?
Well, I see she's pretty much in the groove already. Here you are together.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's an ultra-marathon runner that has none of the gear and all of the ideas. In May, he's doing the National 3 Bear Peaks Challenge entirely on foot, which sees him running two marathons a day for 9 days in a row. Please welcome a man that has to be fit as a fiddle. It's Tony Riddle.
Morning, fit as a fiddle, Tony Riddle. How are you?
What a great intro. No pressure.
He's the best.
It's awesome.
When did you hatch this little plan, this little beauty, Tony?
Well, it was off the back. I ran Land's End to John O'Groats 30 days. So I did 30 miles a day for 30 days.
In September,
barefoot. It was basically to raise awareness, sustainability and environment. So that was one. And then I kind of hatched this plan that I can be, oh, okay, these events are great for that. So the next one will be about almost like offsetting. We're going to ask people to recycle and log what they're doing over that period of time or offset. So you could be rewilding Britain, offset trees, or Terra Nutra and just offsetting carbon for those 9 days that I run. That was kind of behind it. Through that process, it was like, okay, I want to do the Three Peaks. I'd heard so much about the Three Peaks. How can we flip it? So rather than drive between the peaks, as in the carbon footprint of driving, let's run it. So let's run the 485. And I had to give it a bit of time because we just had a new baby in October. So it's literally...
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, man. So Katerina was pregnant. They came with me, like, the whole family, the whole crew were with us on the September run. And then I had to give it a bit of time, you know, to land. And everyone was like, what's the next one? What's the next one? I said, well, we've got a son. That's what's the next thing. That's the next challenge. Looking forward to that. We'll invite that in. And then it's always for some reason, it's around Christmas and New Year. I go, I know. I think it's just having the time,
yeah.
You know, the time away from everything.
And does your wife say he's got that look about him again? He's hatching a plan.
Yeah, well, the bigger plan is, you know, I'm going to do that. And then over the next, it's X amount of years until I'm 50. So the idea is to interview sustainability experts over a period of time, raise awareness for the environment. And then I want to visit all the indigenous populations around the world and interview the true environmentalists, you know?
The Three Bear Peaks Challenge from Wednesday the 6th to Friday the 15th of May. Follow him at tonyriddle.com. And also, he's all over Instagram a lot of the time. Great life hacks there. Fantastic tips on just how to live more naturally, even if you can't live in nature. It's at The Natural Lifestylist. And one of your big sort of taglines is, if you can't live in nature, you can still live naturally, or as close to naturally as is possible for you.
Yeah, like, we can't all live in nature, but it doesn't mean we can't live naturally, or at least find natural ways of living in what would be an urban environment. And why is that important? Well, 83% of the UK live in urban environments, right? And we spend 90% of that time indoors. Let's say the bedroom, you spend how many hours?
Eight, ten.
Yeah. Right? Any sleep study would suggest eight, right? So you're breathing in and out the same air in the same room. Some people might have been in that same bedroom. I know people that have been in the same bedroom for 20 years, right? So firstly, it's the sensory experience. They're in the same linear box for 20 years, breathing in and out the same materials. So that can be benzene, xylene, formaldehyde. They're all neurotoxins, right? So you have the sensory deprivation from the environment because you're living in the same box. So that then dumbs down the neurological system. Then it can be the toxins that we're inhaling, which can dumb down the sensory and neurological system. So I would bring more nature in, more plants, more green, more stuff to stimulate the ancestral eye. But you can also use something very simple that gets you down regulated, and that's breath. So simple breathing techniques. So there's tempos like a 4-second inhale and a 6-second out. There's a 4-second inhale and a 6-second out, and you nasal breathe. Six cycles of that is just a minute, and that's just enough to send you under. But it drops you in, and then you can go into rest and digest. Why rest and digest? Well, that's exactly what it is. That's how we prepare ourselves for sleep. It's how we digest our food, because everything's restful. So there's the environment will change.
Can you tell us about amber light, please?
Absolutely. So melatonin, is we laud it as a sleep hormone, but we don't really respect it. So it has, it's a regulatory system for your digestion. So it controls ghrelin. Ghrelin being a hormone that suggests, ah, I need to eat, right? So melatonin suppresses that. Melatonin picks up or peaks leptin, which is then a hormone that tells you I'm satiated. So imagine without those, you're I'm hungry and I haven't had enough food. That's kicking off. So melatonin will regulate that whole system. When you get to the evening and the sun goes down, melatonin starts to rise, should be rising, in a natural situation. You know I'm saying use nature as a filter. Let's say we're in the savannah right now. Sun sets, right? So then I go through all the way through, and then by 10 p.m., melatonin is at its peak. And melatonin then helps synthesize stuff like human growth hormone, right? Apoptosis, which is how you transform unhealthy cells into healthy cells, melatonin, right? So it has roles within, they suggest within cancer. We've done studies that suggest night shift workers versus day shift workers, right? Night shift workers have higher rates of breast cancer and prostate cancer to day shift workers. Blind people aren't exposed to blue spectrums of light, have like, this NHS study, they have like 11 hours of melatonin. So that's kind of the natural melatonin cycle. And they have the 35 to 50% less cases of breast and prostate cancer. The study is this, right? So they show a simulated night shift experiment versus a sleep chamber darkness. And then they have a simulated night shift worker experience, but wearing amber glasses or blue blocking glasses, which block the blue and green spectrums of light that are picked up by the suprachiasmatic nucleus, which suppresses melatonin, right? Okay.
So good.
So when we suppress that melatonin, again, it's the regulatory system of your hormones, it's the cellular behavior, it's human growth hormone, all those factors, not just the sleep hormone, you know? So what they show in that study is the night shift workers, when they do a melatonin test in the morning, there's no melatonin in their system because they've been surrounded by blue and green spectrums. That's suppressing it. They then show the dark chamber full melatonin, like the blind person study. And then they show people that have worked in the same simulated experience with the same blue and green spectrums, but wearing blue blocking glasses, they have the same levels of melatonin as the dark. So if you're a night shift worker, or even you're at home and you're working, like I sometimes have to sit, I'm writing a book at the moment, so for me it's like in front of a screen sometimes. How do I mitigate that? Well, I just put amber glasses on. Then I know my hormones are in check, my metabolism in check, my cellular health is in check, and I know my digestion's in check. And then I don't need to be asleep.
Well, you look very alive. It's great to meet you.
A great conversation with you.
Can you come and see us again sometime?
I'd love to.
All right.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We've heard from three guests already, but there's loads more still to come. Marie Forleo discusses her talk, Everything is Figureoutable, from our Life Lessons Festival. Dr. Rahul Jandiel also chats his sold-out talk, Retraining the Brain. Francis O'Connor tells us all about Sky Atlantic's new family drama, The End. And Henry Firth and Ian Theasby share recipes from their third book because they are the Bosch Boys, Bosch Healthy Vegan. All that and more, but first, Dapper Dave, who's next?
When Oprah Winfrey calls you a thought leader for the next generation, you've got to be doing something right. She sold out this weekend at Life Lessons Festival, so if you haven't got tickets, now's your chance to learn. Please welcome the author of Everything is Figureoutable. It's the radiant Marie Forleo.
Marie Forleo. Now, you said you would come back, Marie, and you have come back. And I said, what else are you doing while you're here? And you said, I've just come back for you guys. Thank you. Thank you. A thousand thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I was so excited to come back for the show and for Life Lessons. I adore you.
So we didn't talk last time about your relationship with Oprah Winfrey. So how did that come about?
That came about, honestly, I have loved Oprah my entire life and my entire career, and I've always dreamed of having just an opportunity even to meet her. And it was about 2011, 2012, and I get an email in from a set of producers, and they were looking at wanting to do a show with Oprah. So, of course, you know, my jaw hit the floor. And they said, you know, we're looking for a panel. We want to do something with thought leaders for the next generation. No one had ever called me that before. And I'm like, who are they talking about? Anyway, we went through the round of talking with producers. And I will tell you, it was an ironic, just this experience of getting on a plane when I had watched the Oprah Winfrey show for so long, and then getting in the hotel where it's like, guest of the Oprah Winfrey show will stay at. And I'm like, I'm here. I'm on Miracle Mile. It was the most incredible experience meeting her. She is more warm. She is more heartfelt. She is even better in person.
What does she and what do her team like about what you have to say?
I think what they were excited about, in particular with me, is that I'd been doing the work for quite some time and that there was a groundedness to it, that there was a down-to-earthness to it, and that it wasn't based necessarily in just ideas or theories, but that I had been doing the work and I had been helping people for so long. I think that's it. I know when I had done a talk for Oprah, she had this thing called Super Soul Sessions, which is where I first talked about Everything is Figureoutable, and I got off stage and Oprah's like, girl, you can tell a story, and she gave me a high five.
But you really can tell a story.
Thank you.
You're brilliant at communicating. You're also a fantastic listener. You've got lovely timing. You've got lovely rhythm to your thoughts and to your voice, a lovely meter.
Just come here every day? I'm just going to come here. Like, anytime I feel bad about myself, I'm coming on the Chris Evans Show.
Well, I hope you never do. Do you ever feel bad about yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I'm human. I absolutely do. There's times when I feel like, I think like most humans this age, we feel like we're not moving fast enough. We're not where we should be by now sometimes. Yeah. You know, the mind can take over, human mind. But luckily, I have good friends. I have a great team. And I actually practice what I teach, so I have some tools to pull myself back out when I get in those places.
All right, so that's the framing. Give us some take home straight away. What are the tenets of your philosophy about life?
Well, I'll tell you, right now for me, simplify to amplify is making a big comeback. I just think that most people feel so overwhelmed and overstretched and overcommitted, yet undersatisfied with the quality of their life because they're consuming just too much on their phones and they're trying to do too many things and spread too thin. And for me, I'm like, what are the handful of things that I want to focus on, that I want to strengthen, that I want to achieve, that's going to make me the happiest, the most fulfilled, and allow me to contribute the most? And so saying no and getting on what I call the first class ticket on the no train, that is, I'll tell you, you were a big yes for me, but there's many things that come up that I'm like, no, 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 no. Because whatever you say yes to intrinsically means you're saying no to all of these other things and you're stretching yourself too thin. One tip I'll give people. If you wouldn't say yes and be excited to do something tomorrow, don't put it in your calendar for 6 months because it will roll around and you'll be like, why did I say yes to that thing? I want to get out of it. Should I make up that I'm sick? Yeah. You know, I need to take care of my kid. So anyway, that helps.
And that takes up all the brain space as well. Just the dithering and the dallying, it's just no good. I had a great thing yesterday. If you're providing a service for someone, right, it's either... at your behest, your choice, it's either free, you provide it for free, or full charge, but never in between.
Oh, can I tell you what I am? ExpensiveButWorthIt.com. I am in agreement with you 110%. All the content that we create through our show or online or through social media, I'm like, I will give my best stuff away for free. But if you want me to come train you or you want to have an experience with me, it's going to be at a premium price because I will over-deliver over-deliver.
But it's also... If you're willing to do it for free, there must be a greater reason behind it, a higher purpose. So that's fantastic.
Yes.
If you charge full price for it, it's because somebody really wants you. If you find yourself in the middle, you're not neither doing it because somebody wants you or because there's a higher purpose to it. So you're wasting your time.
Yes. And you know what? It never feels joyful. You're never going to make the contribution at the level that's possible for you. And then all of a sudden you're in this middle land of mediocrity, which is the worst place to be in our relationships and our work life and our career anywhere. So I'm with you. It's either free or expensive, and you're fantastic.
Yeah, and when you say, you know, this thing about, no, Greg McKeown's book, Essentialism, which I'm sure you've read. Have you met Greg?
I haven't, but I love his
book. He's the kind of person you'd have on your show, isn't he? He's very Mark Manson-y, I think. In fact, I think they talk about a lot of the same things together. But Greg McKeown says, you know, if you want this test of should I do it or should I not do it, he said a simple test. He said it's not bomb-proof, but it's pretty close. It's either hell yeah or no.
Yes. So can I give you another one on that?
Yeah, please.
So sometimes people get confused whether or not it's fear or intuition. Like, are they afraid because this is a big opportunity, or is it intuition telling them, this is going to cost you a lot in the long run? And so what I advise people to do is close your eyes, go inside, and you do a body test. You ask yourself, does the idea of saying yes to this opportunity make me feel expansive or contracted. We all have a body truth that we often don't listen to.
Yep.
Contracted is this feeling of dread or a sense of pulling back or your shoulders hunching down or just something saying no. Expansive feels like a spark of joy or your chest lifts up, or even if it's terrifying because you've never done it and there's a lot of self-doubt, you're like, this is going to be awesome. Your body says yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So ask yourself, does the idea of saying yes to this opportunity make me feel expansive or contracted? Contracted's a no, expansive is a hell yes.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's a neuroscientist, brain surgeon, Sunday Times best-selling author, has cool tattoos and is very handsome. Basically, he must try harder. His book, Life Lessons from a Brain Surgeon, is out now, and he's at Life Lessons Festival this weekend telling us exactly why your grey matter matters. Please welcome the wonderful Dr. Rahul Jandayal.
Good morning, Dr. Rahul.
The one correction right away, one tattoo, not tattoos.
Really?
And I got it 20 years ago when it was bikers and gangsters, and so when I was training for medical school, they always thought I was part of the custodial staff. And they asked me to mop up the blood sometimes. And I said, I'm happy to do that as long as I get to operate as well.
Well, maybe it's time for another. Maybe this
tattoo.
Is the weekend.
Yeah. Is it, well, life lessons, that's a good one to go for.
Yes, it is. In your book, well, which is amazing, you say and you do many things.
Thank
and you walk us through some very complicated situations and you distill it down for us. You do all the heavy lifting so we might have an idea of what the brain is about. But you do myth bust. Is this myth true? Is there anything to do with this? Where did this myth come from? We hear all the time, most of us go through life using or accessing only 20% of our brain, leaving 80% unused. So is like now. Is that true, first of all?
It's complete nonsense.
Ah,
it makes for a good story. Yep. Scarlett Johansson, that movie Lucy, and she can tap into her powers. And I think Bradley Cooper had a movie where he took a pill and there were these deep powers he harnessed. It's just complete nonsense. And until we had these fancy MRI machines, the myth perpetuated. But now when you put in poets, artists, addicts, into a machine, you see that all corners of the brain will light up. Blood flows to all corners of the brain. Where it comes from is, since the brain is such an energy hog, it's only 3 pounds and it uses 20% of your blood flow, you don't want to have it all dialed up all the time. If you're riding the tube or LA freeways, you actually want to use as little as possible to get the job done, to be efficient. So to do something, you might only use 20% of your brain.
Right.
But it's not like there are corners of your brain that have not been tapped into.
Okay, another lovely phrase that I like is that what's the point of having a mind if you never change it? How can we change our mind? Because often emotions affect the way we think, and then more thinking exacerbates those emotions, and that's a silly old tug of war that's going on there, and it must have a purpose, but it's more short-term than long-term. If we want to change our mind long-term for something that we think will really sort of help us out and sort of give us a different, more aspirational pathway, how might we do that?
Yeah, so there's two things here. So one is habits. So wanting to change your mind might be because you're in a habit you don't like. Habits are good. They're an efficient way for the brain not to have to use all 100% to get things done. But if the habit gets you into a rut, like you're coming down a mountain and it forces you to go down a certain ski slope and you want to change that, that's going to take energy. And what I say is, the compartmentalization of emotional brain, smart brain, simple brain, smart, you know, personality types, that it's not nuanced enough. The heart is a pump, the joints are, you know, they're like engineering, but the brain has two canopies. So if you look at other animals, the back part of our head, you know, above your ear and backwards, and then through your mouth, like if you think of the brain as a mushroom with a stalk, that back part, a lot of animals share. What we have is this frontal lobes that pushed our foreheads forward. And the right behind your forehead is thought, is creativity, is the executive function. But rather than saying we want to be only frontal lobe-ish, or if we only want to be instinctive brain-ish, it's really the nuance of both. And when you want to change your mind, it really depends on the scenario. If you are being chased in an alley, it's not a time to be using your frontal lobe. You want to rely on those assets of your emotional instinctive brain. That same part of the brain that makes you feel disgusted when you smell vomit. That is built into us. Now, if the emotional brain is stressed out and dialed up like a thermostat and you're just getting home and you miss the train, then you want to bring in your thinking brain to say, hey, this stress isn't appropriate. So it's always a duality of what ratio that is. And I would say I am new every day. If you think about the complexity of our minds, I am not my former self. I came here and you supported me and I became a best-selling author. That changed the way I see myself, not just the way other people see me. So I am different than when I was 18, when I dropped out of college, when I was a security guard. I'm different than I was before I fell in love after I fell in love. So rather than thinking about 8 billion people as some cohesive, I can give you an answer about the brain, what I would say is I'm trying to understand just myself, my former self, and my future self. So I think that's a very uplifting message that no triumph or tragedy is permanent. And you can change your habits, as you have.
Marie, your jaw is dropping.
Oh, yeah.
He's good, isn't he?
He's wonderful. I'm also thinking, though, too, about, I'm curious what you feel about just the idea that repetition is a key principle in neuroplasticity. So, for example, we talk about in Everything is Figureoutable, the more that you repeat that phrase, the more it becomes a good habit, a habitual way of thinking or of seeing the world.
Well, I would say two things to that. One, of course, repetition helps you. Athletes are an example of that.
Yeah.
All right. So practice helps. I don't believe it's at some 10,000 number. Like, I know surgeons who've done 10,000 operations and they're mediocre. So this magical number, like if I do 9,500, yeah, I'm not talented. And if I do 10,000 times or plus one, I can become an Olympic athlete. There is talent underneath that. But repetition is important. What I would say is belief is important. So the simplest example of that is placebo. And what it does is it releases the pharmacy in our minds to believe this medicine will help me. It helps you because it's not the medicine that went in and did something. You release your own hormones, your own neurotransmitters, right? And the most interesting part about that is sometimes in these studies when we tell them, hey, listen, this is baloney. I don't know what the phrase here is in Europe for that, but I'm telling you, I'm giving you a fake pill, and it sometimes still has an effect. So that's the complexity and the potential of believing in something. And I work in a cancer center. And I always tell people, at that time in their lives, there are no atheists in the cancer center. Because that belief serves them during this crisis. And they might not have had faith before or after. And I try to connect with them on that level. Like, whatever empowers you. You like to get scans, that works for you. Because you're sort of that person that, I need a scan all the time. You have faith and you just want to trust in us. I'm there with you in your journey in your particular way, in the way your individual mind is dealing with this crisis. And positive thinking and repetition is part of that.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Sky Atlantic's brand new series, The End, will make you gasp, laugh and cry all within the first 10 minutes of episode one. It's available on demand now via your Sky Q. And here to tell us all about it is the Golden Globe nominated star of the show. Please welcome the wonderful Frances O'Connor.
Good morning, Frances.
Hi, how are you? You?
Welcome. I'm very well. Welcome to the jungle, and well done on this program. It is absolutely fantastic.
Thank you.
It is
Thank
so
you.
Good. I was supposed to watch one episode last night because you were coming on.
Yeah.
I watched three, and then I just had to go to, well, I had to try to go to sleep. I could have watched all of them.
I'm sorry if we ruined your night.
No, you really didn't. And my wife loved it too.
Oh, great.
So thank you so much for the program. And now it does concern itself with suicide, and whenever we talk about that and some other things, we must mention it on the radio. So we will be talking about suicide here. Now, bizarrely, in a very light-hearted fashion, but nevertheless, it is suicide. Francis, tell us about. I just tried to outline the story to our other guests here. Did you sort of get it from what I said?
I got it instantly.
Right.
Okay. Brilliant.
Let's hear really similar from the pro. So, get everybody to buy into this show now.
I think it's a show that, I mean, it's called The End, but really it's about how we deal with our life, you know. And I think even though it deals with some kind of darker issues like euthanasia and suicide, it's really about human connection and how we deal with life in the moment, really.
Right. So your mum, yes, she's had enough.
Harry Walter.
Your dad has come and gone.
Yes.
He had a story that she didn't know about.
Yeah.
We won't go too much into that because it's a spoiler and it's a surprise, so I wouldn't like to go any further with that. She tries to end her own life in it, what turns out to be quite a comical way in you know, in the end, for the end.
Yeah.
But then the beginning of the end starts.
Yes.
And she finds herself in Australia about a minute later from central London.
Yeah, I grew up with my mum trying to commit suicide on several occasions, and this is kind of her last attempt, and she still doesn't succeed, so she gets shipped out to Australia where I'm going to look after her, and I'm a palliative care doctor, and we really don't get on, and it's kind of about how we kind of reconnect and kind of resolve some of our issues. Yeah.
Okay. And you know, it's awkward, and it's you can't take your eyes off it, because when something's awkward on the telly or in the cinema, or, you know, or even in print, but it's clever, that's when it becomes compelling, I think.
Yeah, well, I think if you're going to deal with a subject like euthanasia or assisted suicide, you have to do it in a way that's life-affirming, yeah. if that makes sense, which is kind of a contradiction in terms. But I think you don't want the show to be this earnest kind of exploration.
No, no, and it's euthanasia. Really not either.
And it's not. It's really funny and irreverent and it has a darkness to it. My mother, just because she is quite a difficult person and...
She's cool, though.
She's very cool.
She is. She's so still.
Yeah.
And she hits the bottle. So she hasn't drank in her whole life before. And then she hits the bottle so hard in the care home that she gate crashes a wedding between two 70-year-olds because they've messed up the care home. And she doesn't want to, she's not invited to the wedding. She doesn't want to talk to anybody. She just wants to know where the nearest off license is. Is that right?
Yeah, she makes up for lost time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the
in a lot of different ways.
One of the Australian ladies says, hey, Sheila, what's your story? By the way, keep your hands off all men. Ratio of 15 women to one girl in here. That's my husband. I'm keeping him as close to me, as away from you as I possibly can. Or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's the other thing that's really great about the show is that it doesn't patronise old people. Yep. It kind of really, I mean, even the term old people is patronising, I think. You know, people who are of a certain age, it doesn't patronise them and it sees them as real people with sexuality, with humour, with, you know.
Your daughter's going through puberty.
Yes.
Your son can't take his eyes off his smartphone.
Yes.
He's questioning his own sexuality.
Yeah.
So you've got all that going on as well.
Yeah.
In half an hour, this
transgender.
Is, by the way.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We cover a lot of bases.
You do.
No, it's a... Morgan, the actor playing the role, was actually transitioning while we were shooting the series. And it's the character's a transgender kid who's transitioning from a girl to a boy and all of that entails. And he also, a year ago, had... tried to kill himself because he didn't feel like he was in the right body. So,
and your husband is in jail?
And my husband's in jail.
And your mum warned you about him before you married him? I've got a lot
on my plate.
Honestly, it is fun. I was saying before, TV is so good nowadays. It's never been better television, has it? You know,
yeah.
I mean, I know there's a lot of rubbish couch potato-y telly out there, but there's a lot of, there's some very, very good stuff, and you don't have to mine very deeply to find it either nowadays.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think the world of TV has kind of opened up in terms of storytelling that we can really go anywhere now, and the audience are getting more and more sophisticated about how they're willing to come with us too.
What did you think of our conversation off the air
before? Fantastic. Yeah, it's nice to get in there.
And you're talking about acting and about the fact that, you know, when you put together a character, you build a character, you almost build the brain for that character, and in a way that you find that sort of a great relief and a great exercise for your own existence.
Yeah. Well, I think creativity is invigorating for everyone, and you don't have to be an actor to do that. I think creativity is fundamental to being a human being, and it's life-affirming to do it. But yeah, I think acting, you're kind of constantly reinventing yourself, and it's very good for you.
And we were born to create. That's, I think, primarily what we're here for.
Yeah.
Marie, before you go, some parting words, please, for us. Anything you damn well like?
Well, for me, I end my show every time with this. It's stay on your game and keep going for your dreams, because the world needs that special gift that only you have. So don't steal it from us. Share it.
Okay, great.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Whether you're born to eat corn or say see ya to soya, you need to listen to our next guest. Their hit show, Living on the Veg, continues this Sunday morning on ITV, and their new book, Bosch Healthy Vegan, is out now. Please welcome the purveyors of the finest nosh from the land of Bosch. It's Henry Firth and Ian Thiesby.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that, man.
Thanks for having us. Your intro nearly ate itself there, David.
Don't run out of breath, I'm really sorry.
Okay, no problem. Well, I hope it's worth it. No, it was worth it. All right, so Living on the Veg continues Sunday at 10:30. You were massive on YouTube. That's where you were born. Thank you, YouTube. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, the universe. But then ITV said, well, we'll have a bit of the Bosch Boys. And it's going very well, isn't it?
How cool is that? Yeah, we're really excited to have a show. And it's us. People can see us cooking. We're cooking loads of plant-based classics. So loads of your favourites from the Bosch books or the Bish Bash Bosch books. Mostly me and Ian just messing around in the kitchen. Yeah. But we have also got a load of stellar guests on as well. So it's been a real amazing experience.
Didn't get the invite, did you?
Hopefully we'll get another series.
Time shmime. You will definitely get another series, because your audience share is huge, isn't it, on a Sunday morning?
It's a good time slot.
Is what I'm hearing.
We're not really into that stuff, but I think it's going well. Definitely... People love it on Twitter.
I know it's going well.
Oh, really? I think a good indication that it's doing well is my mum texted me on the Saturday following the first show, and she was like, "You're on the TV." And I was like, yeah, I know. Sunday morning, 10:30 a.m. ITV. And she's like, "No, right now, it's Saturday." And so they're rerunning the show, which we didn't know was happening.
Well,
so
no, that's what they did. I mean, the thing with cookery shows, and there are some genres like this, usually factual entertainment, you'll be on the telly forever. Even if you just did these 8 shows, you know, you can buy Dubai.
I think ours is pretty solid because it's the first vegan cooking show.
Yeah.
Which we're obviously very honoured to be a part of.
What is the rainbow ratio about, the 50-25-25 that you bang on about all the time?
Well, so, you know, people eat plant-based and think that's healthy, but it doesn't have to be healthy. You can eat, like, loads of burgers and lasagnas, and that's probably not really what you should be eating. In fact, if you end up eating loads of beige food on a vegan diet, you might not be getting the right nutrients. So we like to say, eat the rainbow, get as much colour in as you can, and think about 50% of your plate being fruits and vegetables, about 25% should be whole grains, and about 25% should be protein. So that's like your beans, your pulses, your nuts, etc.
Okay, and you talk about fakeaways, don't you?
Fakeaways.
Yeah. Do you talk about fakeaways?
We do, yes.
Okay, yeah. I thought it was a typo. Like... No, they don't talk about fakeaways. Yeah. Oh, this is really embarrassing. Yeah. Tell us about fakeaways.
So when we write our recipes, we always try and sort of hark back to what we used to eat and the sort of things that people don't want to miss. So we kind of recreate the things like your Chinese takeaway stuff or your curry or your pizza. So we try and get that hearty food that everyone's like used to eating, would just make it plant-based.
Okay, so because we have an emotional connection with that, don't we? And that's the thing about food, isn't it? That's why it's has such a hold over us.
Exactly.
You know, we were talking a couple of days ago to another guest, the amazing Tony Riddle, and Tony was telling us about, you know, on those occasions where a little kid will fall over and maybe graze their knee and be in absolute floods of tears. Mum and dad, especially granddad and granddad, will go, "Oh, come here, sweetheart," and they'll dab the knee down. Say, "Come on, let's get your chocolate bar, Chris."
And
so the emotional connection is Mars bar equals love, and you take that with you for the rest of your life, which is okay short term, but long term. No offense to Mars, let's substitute any kind of confectionery for any kind of brackets that you'd like.
Yeah.
But may not be such a good message. So, but however, is you can replace the emotional connection with some kind of healthy underbelly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Not so much
and
the belly.
Even for us, being plant-based, it just makes sense. So, like, fish and chips, I used to get that all the time on the way home from work after a bad day.
Yep.
Now we make tofu fish and chips, which is basically the same thing, but you've got tofu in the middle.
And you've got a great, whopping great naughty burger on the front cover of your book.
You naughty burger. tell us about fish and tofu. How do you say it? What's the best way to say it?
Tofu or tofu-fish.
Tofu-fish and chips.
So
the batter there is the thing that's going to interest me most, because that's the best bit of fish and chips.
Yeah, so the batter is, you can use an ale with a bit of some milk and
dairy-free milk, some flour. It's
so we can still
easy.
Have proper batter.
It's the same,
of course. But the tofu is the main thing. It's like what you want to do with that is you want to press the firm tofu, and then you want to rehydrate it with a really nice flavouring, like wrap it in nori, freeze it off so it kind of expands. And then when you fry it, all the oil gets into the thing, into the sort of fibres of the tofu, and it gives a really wonderful kind of fishy texture. Really, really delicious.
And now you're on mainstream telly. Mm-hmm. You know, your YouTube massive. You know, are they still in love with you, or are they outside your houses protesting, saying, you've left us, you've deserted us?
No. I think our relationship with our audience is hopefully as strong as ever, and we'll keep making free recipes for them on our channels. You know, what we do is we make free videos. We'll keep doing that, and hopefully we'll keep engaging with them, and they'll keep liking it.
Yes. When you made your first ever video last week, we played the first ever video that was uploaded to YouTube.
Amazing,
and it starred one of the founders of YouTube. It was 19 seconds, and it was him at a zoo.
In a zoo, that's right.
Because YouTube was originally intended to be a dating channel. And what they discovered was...
Really?
Yeah, the mechanism of it was actually more popular for loading up clips of any sort. And they retained it, and they still own it, or they're still shareholders in it, and it was YouTube. But when you made your first ever YouTube video, did you make it with a phone or a camera or what?
We had a pretty solid camera setup, actually. It was a lot worse than the one we've got now. But we got a videographer in.
Oh, so you did?
We hired people to come and make it look really good. It still isn't good by our today's standards. Like, we've got a lot better. Yeah. But no, we did it properly.
Yeah.
But that sort of guerrilla filming, you know, when the Beatles and Elvis Presley, when they recorded their amazing albums, it was a smaller studio. It was more things happening at once. It was, you know, all very sort of, very sort of almost Neanderthal. You know, did you find that there's, because you've got to try and keep that rawness, because that in a way is, it's a bit rock and roll, it's a bit punk, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, what we basically did was like, it was top down videos. So it was a bit grainy. It wasn't the best sort of camera ever. But I think the reason why they really resonated with people, because people could imagine themselves cooking the dishes from that top sort of perspective.
Wayne's World-y in a way.
Yeah, a little bit like that.
Do you remember that first shoot? So we spent 3 days in the flat that we lived in together. It was the hottest day of summer. Mm-hmm. And we did 3 days back to back, 20 hours, 24 hours, 27 hours, which doesn't make sense because we did the extra day, extra long.
All I'm imagining is the smell.
It was big lights, five lads and 20 recipes to film. So it was a really tough shoot, the first one.
Yeah, but it was well worth it. Yeah. Set us in good stead. We're not shy of hard day's work.
Cooking on gas. Of course, if you're working hard at something you love, the time flies by. Somebody said the other day, time doesn't necessarily fly by when you're having fun, but time just changes when you're having fun. It can go slower or it can go quicker. The point is, it's no longer clock time. It's psychological experience time.
You get into flow.
Flow is exactly what it is.
Everything just stops and you're not thinking about anything.
Good for you. All right. And these two have known each other for ages, since they were kids, and they're still together. And they row all the time off air, but I mean, on the air, no, they don't.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
If you're more lunch in your car over a Michelin star or more Crystal Palace than Buckingham Palace, then listen closely to our next guest. His new tour, Teacups and Tiaras, A History of Etiquette, starts next month. And here to clearly and concisely tell us all about it is the immaculate etiquette expert himself, William Hanson.
Good morning, William.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
How are you?
I'm very well,
Excellent posture. Very beautifully turned out. Almost the opposite of everyone else that is here at the moment. Not works here because you don't work here.
It's a lovely colour sweater you're wearing.
Thank you very much indeed. Yes. Thank you very much indeed. I do try it now and again from a colour point of view, but that's about it. Right, so first of all, let's get this Uber issue out of the way. What happened with you and your Uber address?
Yes, so I've just moved house and a millennial sort of problem. I was in town over the weekend. I fired up it wasn't Uber, it was another taxi app. Popped in home, got in the car, was quite tired, wasn't really focusing on where I was going. And the driver said, "Is this all right?" Finally, after half an hour. And I looked around and it was my old address. And I was so mortified. I just said, yes, it's fine, it's fine, fine. Thank you so much, thank you. And got out and stood there for a few minutes thinking, oh, shoot. And then eventually then got another one.
God bless you.
So it was an expensive trip that day.
Why do we do that? I've done that a thousand times where you just go, yeah, it's fine. No, this is so not fine.
A friend of mine once bought a car, which is the same as her old car, but just slightly newer, and just put home in the sat-nav. And then the next thing she knew, she was 10 miles away from Newcastle and she lives in southwest London, near me.
Yeah, so I was driving home in Portugal one night and my cousin who lives there, he was behind me. And so he just followed me because we were staying at the same house, but he wasn't following me. He was following somebody else and he ended up driving up there driving. They called the police. Because they Anyway, so that's that.
It happens to us all. That's made me feel better.
Okay, good. Politeness, etiquette, manners. The perfect storm. It can all be right and acceptable and worth doing or not at all. Never the twain shall meet or not.
Yes, I think manners and etiquette, two similar words, not necessarily the same thing.
Right.
90% of the time etiquette's correct, but actually sometimes in order to be more well-mannered, you have to break the rule of etiquette. But it means that you need to know the rules. So when you do break them, you break them with style and panache. And my job as an etiquette coach, I mean, for the last sort of 12, 13 years, I've gone around teaching people, giving them confidence so they can go into social or professional situations and not panic about how to eat peas or how they should address somebody because they know.
And so what's the most common thing that people worry about and want you to help them fix?
Dining. I think it's anything to do with the table and eating, because in the West we have made, especially in our part of the West, we have made dining quite difficult. We have thousands of pieces of different cutlery, we have different size plates, we have lots of different rules, but a lot of these rules go back to times from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. We still are following rules that were set 600, 700 years ago, because we are not a country that started the day we were born. There is a history.
And so when you do your stage show,
yes,
is this teaching en masse then?
Yes, this is a new
it's like
way.
Like a seminar.
It's a fun night out. It is a show. I mean, I'm not going to sing or start dancing, so don't panic about
that.
Not yet. Not on this one. But yes, it's another way to entertain and inform the nation about the history of our slightly weird in places.
But manners. We do love it, don't we? I mean, we had a family discussion a couple of weeks ago about elbows on the table.
Yes.
Right now, I always put my elbows on the table, and my wife had a go at the kids, and has had a go at the kids for ages. And one moment, in a moment of madness, a couple of weeks ago, I brought this up. I said, you know, what is wrong with the kids putting their elbows on the table? And in the end, to my great relief, she capitulated. Said, "Well, I don't really know. I was just always told to do it by my nan, and she was great with manners and etiquette."
Yes.
And I said, "But is there anything really wrong with it?"
Well, I think certainly, and it's slightly shifted. When there is food on the table now, absolutely not. Maybe at the end of a meal, it's if your host is doing it. But historically, we do that because the tables that in the Middle Ages that you were eating from, they were banqueting tables that were assembled just before the feast began and then cleared away because they were all in this sort of multi-purpose hall and the tables were not secure. So if you put your elbows on the table, it would tip. And so it became the etiquette to not put your elbows on the table.
But that's practical, isn't it?
Yes. Now, that etiquette's still with us today, even though most of us have pretty secure, fixed tables. But I think we've had hundreds of generations sort of growing up knowing that actually it looks sort of wrong to have your elbows on the table, so there is still I can understand your wife's hatred of it.
Okay, no, so can I felt it actually as well. And so, okay, and what's like what's the holy grail of etiquette and or manners? Would you say?
Well, for me, certainly what irritates me is just the sort of people not getting the basics. You don't have to have gone to finishing school or come to the show or whatever. It's just people not saying please and thank you.
I love it, don't you?
And sorry and gratitudes in short supply.
Right, do you give lessons on how we may get our little ones to do that more?
Yes, I work with all ages.
Do you?
Yes, etiquette is applicable to everyone. So.
I think whenever we get people on talking about anything to do with this,
yes.
You can apply it to parenthood, can't you?
Oh, absolutely.
So
yes.
Come on then, give us some take-homes.
I think really children will, first of all, as we all know, children will copy what their parents do at that in the early ages. Of course, we all know when they then become teenagers, what mum and dad do is we do completely the opposite. But in the formative years, actually having parents not putting elbows on the table or just eating nicely, seeing them write a thank you letter or whatever it happens to be, is key. And actually, my grandmother gave me a book of etiquette when I was 12. That's really why I'm sitting here today. So we have my late granny to thank for that. So you don't quite have to give etiquette books to children unless you desperately want to. But I think it's important that they mimic. Children are mimics. So if they see good manners, they will be well mannered.
Well, they do say there's a great quote, isn't there? Leadership is not about what to do, it's about how to be.
Yes.
That's good leadership. Great leadership, actually, is how to be. And then the
absolutely.
Rest hopefully will fall in line after that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Can't believe you're only 29.
Well, I'm 30 now.
Are
just,
you?
Okay,
just about.
Thank you. Yes.
All
I know.
Right.
I know. I sound 75. But
no, you're just so consummate. You're so competent.
You're very kind.
Have the Americans fallen in love with you at any point?
I've done bits over there. I went over to do some work. I did a Guinness World Record where I had to teach a lot of Americans how to curtsy, and I got to immigration, and they said, "And what's your job?" And I said, "Oh, I'm an etiquette coach." And without missing a beat, the immigration officer said, "And do you feel guilty when people give you money to do that?" And I said, "No, not really." He said, "Well, welcome to America." And then I went.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
We have two genius podcasters with us now, and their names are, Dave.
They wage war on menopause, lift the lid on having teenage kids and everything in between. Episode 6 of their podcast, Postcards from Midlife, is available this Sunday, and they're recording a live podcast at Life Lessons Festival this very weekend. Please welcome the magazine editing masters, Lorraine Candy and Trish Halpin.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Okay, so how did you two get together to enter and to enjoy the world of podcasting?
Well, we've known each other nearly 30 years now,
yes,
I think. Yeah, since the beginning of our careers. So we've spent the last kind of 10 years going through what I would call the perimenopause.
Right.
Thinking we were going completely mad.
Yeah.
There was something, kept forgetting everything, quite depressed, a bit anxiety.
Is it like a sort of second part two of baby brain? Is it kind of that?
I think it's much, much darker. Is much it? Darker than okay. Baby Brain. Okay. Yeah, it's much darker than zipping toddlers into things.
We actually conceived the podcast over a slightly boozy emotional dinner, didn't we?
Yeah,
in Paris.
Yeah, we just thought...
One fashion week.
What's going on? Why all these changes? Why is this happening to us? What's going on? Did a bit of research, realised there were lots of women talking about the same kind of thing, and there's not a lot of information out there for that 40 to 60 part of women's lives, and we wanted to just get the word out. Really.
And it's bringing things like Mumsnet to life, these kind of conversations, these kind of double acts and interviews. And so one of the best ways to do a podcast like this is to set out an agenda, also, you know, sort of create a community and then invite people on for different takes on their own lives that may relate to other people's lives that are listening.
Yeah, it's personal stories and women telling it how they've experienced it, which, and there's not a lot about it. It's not a lot about it in the media. There's not a lot about it on radio. And we just thought this is a good place to tell stories.
And it's kind of, it's about midlife as well, isn't it? It's not just about that particular part of being a woman, but it's everything that happens
to
us.
It's like a perfect storm of just...
Yeah, teenage. If you've got a parent of teenagers...
Going over there, their hormones are coming in here. You're all trying to live in one space.
Yeah, and you're trying to hold down a job and do all the things that you're doing.
You think you're getting a bit of your life back, but then are you or are you not getting... By the way, what bits of this life? Oh, I've never had this life before, so I can't be getting it back, but it reminds me of something that I maybe once had.
And also, you're thinking, in the time I've got left, now I might be halfway through in this pause bit, you know, I'm never going to win an Olympic medal. I'm never going to do all these things, but I'm really going to make it count. But at the same time, you've got all this teenager family stuff happening.
And
as
also
well.
Aging parents as well. We've had a lot of people contacting us about that. So we are, it's that phrase, isn't it? Sandwich. The sandwich generation.
You're surrounded by challenges and opportunities.
Yes.
And or opportunities. That's the thing,
exactly.
Isn't it, I suppose? So how do you in on the people you want to talk to. I know you've had some amazing guests already. So how do you get them? Where do they come from? What do they talk about?
We wanted them to tell their own personal stories, not just about the perimenopause, but about, you know, being... We had a lady who had 10 children on. We've had Louise Wenner from Sleeper on, who's going back on tour.
Very interesting, that story, Louise's story, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think we just wanted... We knew women were talking about it, and we wanted other women to come and tell us their stories. That's the community
we're building.
And I think
because we're journalists, we always have an angle. So... you know, we've got this trained into us. So each of those women, we will go in on a particular angle. So Louise, it was this idea. She's back out on the road with her band Sleeper. She was a huge rock star in her 20s.
And it's this idea of leopard print. Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, how does she feel? She, you know, portrayed as a kind of sex symbol in her 20s. What kind of response is she now getting in her 50s? She's still wearing leather skirts and, you know, all of that, and looking absolutely brilliant. So we want to talk about specific pertinent things with these women as well.
And be funny and humorous and celebrate the joy of the next bit of our lives.
Yeah, of course. Because, I mean, you know, when you count the rest of your potential days in summers and Christmases, it really focuses the mind.
Yeah, I try not to do that.
No, but I think it really helps.
Yeah. It makes me really melancholy and sad.
No, but initially... Yes. Yeah, so that's the short-term emotion. So emotions are useful short-term as springboards to have a look at what you might be able to apply from a lot more, you know, long form. And I think that helps.
Well, I think it helps also...
So it gets you going.
It gets you going. And then when you've got someone to talk to about it and then you realise other women are talking about it, it just spurs you on a bit, I think. Mm-hmm. We're trying to make it lighthearted as well. It's not kind of, you know, it's not intense and serious.
No.
It's quite upbeat.
We have a little segment at the end where we call it nostalgia noodling, where we look back on all the kind of stuff that, you know, from our childhoods and teen years. And, you know, because we were the ones going to see Oasis originally and we were going to Glastonbury. We were doing all of these things. So it's quite fun to look back on some of the funny little things.
I think it's a really interesting time because, you know, if you think about the 60s and about what went on in the 60s, and we were just being born then, weren't we? So we didn't witness the 60s, but we were a product of the 60s, which is quite interesting. Yeah. We are a product of the 60s. So the second best thing to being there to witness the 60s is being a product of the 60s.
Yeah.
And then because we had that sort of liberated experience in the 70s, you know, post-World War II, and our mums and dads were enjoying this rainbow that they thought they may never see, then we were born out of positivity. We were born out of optimism. And for us to now be middle-aged and for things to be going on in around the world that, you know, as they are, we might be, we might not be, but we might be the generation who gets the fact that we have to fix this because that's where we came from. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And before that, this generation never existed because you didn't need that optimism. optimism because, lots of terrible things had happened, but not to the extent that they did in the first half of the 20th century.
But that's what's so brilliant about having teenagers. They're kind of relentlessly passionate about stuff. I mean, whether they know the facts or not, it's just brilliant having them in the room talking about how they are going to fix it. Or mine are like that, yeah. They think they're going to fix this mess.
Because you're their mum, that's why you're a brilliant mum. Now, what you also did at the end of your podcast is you list things that are particularly pertinent on your radar at the moment. Mm-hmm. So things like what, for example?
Oh my gosh, all sorts of... Well, Megan Rossi we had on because I've been trying her. I've been doing the guts. I mean, Trish is very healthy and very good at cooking. We're like the opposite personality. So she'll always have something quite good domestic-wise and I'll always have some... mad. They're open water swimming.
A lot of the books that we read as well. I talked about a friend giving me this lovely little book about Ikigai, which I think you're quite into, Chris.
Yeah, I love that book. It's a little blue book, isn't it?
Little blue book.
Yeah,
I love it. By the bed. It's on the bedside table. Yeah. Pick that up and read that, which is all about finding your purpose and value.
And enjoying
happiness.
The process and not worrying about the end, just enjoying the means.
So it's just sharing little nice little things that
might be helpful,
might
be useful to other people, might move people along a bit.
Yeah, good. So the next six episodes, so you're halfway through. Congratulations, it's half time.
Not been fired, no swearing.
How does it feel? You can swear on podcasts.
Can you swear on podcasts?
Of course you can.
I didn't know that. You told me I couldn't swear on podcasts.
Well, you absolutely can. I mean, that's what I mean. You know, if you listen to Joe Rogan's podcast, that's the reason that lots of the superstars go on there, because they can have a normal conversation.
Swear. Okay, we'll do we're going to do some swearing. Maybe not at life lessons on Saturday.
You'll do a list for me of words I can and cannot use, won't you?
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.